Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. The first case this morning is Corey v. Board of Education of the City of Chicago. Ms. Gibbons.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I am Kathleen Gibbons on behalf of the Board of Education of the City of Chicago, and I will initially be using 11 minutes and saving 4 minutes for my rebuttal time. The issue we're here before you right now is whether or not the district court abused his discretion when he imposed an arbitrary enrollment cap on the Chicago Public Schools that had no rational basis in law or fact, and he affirmed the denial of the Chicago Public Schools waiver from that cap without any basis given for the summary denial of the waivers and no criteria established for how Chicago could possibly get a waiver in the future. And this has now resulted in 95 schools on June 1st, 2005 exceeding that enrollment cap and 12,310 students with disabilities who could now face serious consequence.
Ms. Gibbons, about the jurisdiction in this case, the State Board of Education and Chicago Public Schools had different agreements, didn't they? One had a 20% and the other didn't.
We had different agreements, but actually neither agreement contained an enrollment cap. The Chicago Public Schools agreement in Corey H. actually made no mention of any types of caps or quotas. The Illinois State Board of Education settlement agreement contained a reference that minimum and maximum enrollment parameters would be set and that there would be a waiver process from which Chicago could get a waiver from those parameters if they violated or ran afoul of the individualized education program IEP process, and that that process was to be developed between Chicago, the Illinois State Board of Ed, and the plaintiffs. And that, in fact, never occurred in this case.
But the plaintiffs have never sought to enforce the 20%, have they?
Yes, they have. The 20% is now one of the compliance figures that the Chicago Public School must meet in the March 7th, 2007 order. When the cap actually went into effect, it is now required that all Chicago Public Schools must meet the 20% enrollment cap and or get a waiver. And if a waiver is not given, Chicago faces, I guess, perpetual court supervision under Corey H. until we can get every school to meet that cap or get a waiver.
What was the sanction for not meeting it in those 90-some situations?
We haven't actually had the sanction yet because we brought the appeal to you.
You haven't had a waiver yet then?
Correct. We asked.
Waiver denied.
Right. The waiver was denied. On June 1st, 2005, Chicago filed a waiver request to the Illinois State Board of Education in which we listed all 95 schools. We had asked the State Board of Ed before that point what was needed for a waiver because no other school district in the state of Illinois is subjected to an enrollment cap, and so there is actually no process in state law to get a waiver from something that doesn't exist except for Chicago. The State Board of Ed was non-responsive, so what Chicago did was looked to IDEA, which allows a continuum of services, so allows a separate school, allows clustering of children with low-incidence disabilities, and absolutely allows a child to go to their neighborhood school. So we then listed all 95 schools in our waiver request. In our cover letter, we explained that next to each school, if it was a separate school, we indicated that. If it contained a cluster site, we actually identified the type of children in the building. And if there was nothing there, that indicated it was a neighborhood school, or actually three of the schools on the list are our jail schools, which are located at 26th and California or at the juvenile court. So those children are obviously adjudicated into those buildings, and Chicago has no choice, neither does the child, to go there. They must go there because they are in the criminal justice system. So we listed all of that on our waiver, and then the Illinois State Board of Education was silent, and the monitor stepped in, and the monitor said before the Illinois State Board of Education, or the board was to deny our waivers and then asked us for 7 years of data for each one of those 95 schools. which the Chicago board then objected to, said most of the data requested was irrelevant, it was burdensome, it did not lead to whether or not a waiver should be granted using IDEA standards. And we have continually objected to the request and the fact that the process goes outside of the state board's settlement agreement.
So what the waiver process is pending?
The waivers were denied, and then Judge Gettleman, when he entered the March 7, 2007 order, in fact, affirmed the monitors'
imposition
of all of these extra requirements that go above and beyond the settlement agreements.
They were denied because you didn't submit all of the...
Correct. They were denied because, they said we could not do it as a waiver. We had to do 95 individual waivers. One school at a time. I'm assuming it might get down to one child at a time. And that we then had to put in all of this additional information. So at that point, Chicago went through the Corey H. process where we went back to the monitor, asked for relief. The monitor denied that. We then went to the district court, asked for relief. They denied it.
Relief meaning you don't have to put it all, give them all that information?
We asked for two reliefs. One, that we needed a constructive waiver process. And also, at that point in time, the 20% cap in 2000, when we first argued it, Judge Gettleman actually acknowledged the detrimental effects that that cap could have, that if an IEP decision was made based on an enrollment cap, that would in fact violate the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act IDEA, and that he was very leery about the transferring of any students because for some of these schools, we would actually transfer out non-class members. We would have to transfer out the non-disabled students, not the children with disabilities. And at that point, the monitor's then assistant stood up and assured Judge Gettleman that, in fact, this cap would not go in effect for 5 years. And at that point, it would be moot.
It's in 2000, he said.
In 2000. That it would be moot, that there would be no detrimental effect, nothing would happen. So Judge Gettleman said, all right then, let's wait and see. We pointed out
that... And you did not challenge it then in 2000, right?
No, we did not challenge it then in 2000 because at that point we did not believe that there was any issue because if in fact it was moot, we had no injury. It would only result in an actual ripe injury once it went into effect on June 1st, 2005 and actual schools and children were affected. And then at the minute it went into effect on June 1st, 2005, and Chicago realized that we had 12,310 students with disabilities who would be impacted, plus hundreds of non-disabled children, we immediately went back and through the Corey H. process sought redress to try to get the cap eliminated.
So you preempted any movement of children pursuant to the order by filing and getting a temp. Well, I assume it was stayed then.
Correct, it was stayed. Nothing has been done pending this appeal. And so that is why we brought this to through the Corey H. process and now to you in an attempt to keep the children from having to be transferred because even though in plaintiff's brief they allege that there still is no harm and nobody has been transferred, Chicago is left between a rock and a hard place. We either have to follow this cap and impose the cap, and we will then have to move children because that's the only way to bring the schools, many of these schools, under 20% because many of these schools, it's neighborhood children who have the absolute right under IDEA to be at their neighborhood school if we can implement their IEP there. And so the only way we can come into compliance with the Corey H. cap is to transfer those students to another school, not their neighborhood school. And by doing that, even the district court acknowledges that's a violation of IDEA, and so Chicago will be facing thousands of due process claims when we attempt to actually impose that cap and start moving children based on a numeric number instead of on individual needs.
What are we supposed to do?
We actually would like you to find that this is an actual abuse of discretion and reverse the order imposing the cap and eliminate any type of enrollment cap in the Chicago public schools.
Is that because there's no way you can have an enrollment cap and still focus on each individual student? I'm confused about the students with disabilities, because there has to be a very broad range every student slightly different. I don't understand.
Oh, yes. Chicago Public Schools has about 55,000 children with disabilities. The IDEA recognizes 13 different disabling conditions, and so the children are very different. And the Corey H. lawsuit began with the allegation that the Chicago Public Schools was not educating children with disabilities in the least restrictive environment and was actually making the LRE decisions based on a disability label. So saying, oh, because you have a learning disability, you go here. Because you have a cognitive disability, you go here. And so through its settlement agreement, Chicago embarked on a massive training program to try to teach its staff how to make the LRE decision correctly and to actually base it on the child's individual needs and not look at a disability category, not look at a numeric figure or an enrollment cap. So when you're sitting at that IEP meeting, you look at Joey and try to decide, what does Joey need, and can we put it here in his neighborhood school in the general ed classroom? And if we can't bring all the aids, supplementary aids and services to them there in that classroom, we then start with moving them out. Now, I do see my light has come on, and so if you do not have any more questions right now, I would reserve the rest of my time. But we will be asking that you do find that there has been an abuse of discretion, because even the plaintiffs in their brief have failed to put forth any rational reason in law or fact as to why this enrollment cap was done, and they do not contest Chicago's characterization that it was arbitrary. They rely solely on alleged procedural mistakes to try to keep the cap in place, not that it actually is good and logical and will help us reach the end of the Corey H. litigation. Thank you.
Mr. Elson.
Good morning, Your Honors. We have in our brief argued why Judge Gettleman was right in imposing this 20% cap and why it was a necessary remedial measure to remedy the extreme segregation of disabled students that the court had found after trial. But what I'd like to emphasize is this appeal is really needless. Had the board followed the waiver process for accepting schools from the 20% cap, its objections to that cap would likely have been taken care of. There's no reason to believe that the monitor and the Illinois State Board of Education would have denied any waiver requests had the board bothered to supply the information that the monitor said was necessary in order to give an explanation for why a school should be waived.
And that would be each school, 95 of them.
Right. It was anticipated from the beginning when these caps, when the 20% was imposed pursuant to the settlement agreement with the ISBE that the board did not object to, that there would be schools that would be accepted from the cap, such as cluster schools, where because they're kids with low incidence disabilities in these schools, there would be a higher concentration of disabled students than the 20%, or in schools where maybe the natural proportion of kids with disabilities in the attendance area would be higher than the 15% for high schools and the 10%, I believe 11% for elementary schools, and then a waiver would be justified. But the blanket 95 school waiver at tab 13 of the appendix that the board did submit had no explanations. It just was sort of a checkoff of the school. So the monitor was totally justified, we submit, in asking for additional information to justify why a school should be accepted from the waiver. And the board didn't just abandon that process. It just didn't submit the information. No waiver has been denied. To the extent that the monitor said, give me the information, we'll consider the waiver for each school. Now, if the board had thought that this information was burdensome, it could have asked the monitor to change the informational requirements, or then ask the district court to change the informational requirements, but it never did that. In its reply brief, it makes this as the point of jurisdiction, that changes the agreement, having the monitor require informational requirements, sort of as an afterthought.
Well, the monitor seems to have a lot of power here.
Oh, yes. Both agreements give the monitor considerable authority to do what is necessary to effectuate the settlement agreement.
And this is a judge of some kind, I guess? The monitor?
The monitor originally was Judge Joseph Schneider, a retired circuit court judge. Now we have a Ms. Yanius, a very experienced Chicago litigator and advocate.
But it seems that when you have 95 schools, you got to have a waiver for each school, and then I could foresee a lot of individual students, as those are usually the cases we get, you know, these kinds of cases. It's individual students come up complaining about the IEP, whatever, the individual education program, whatever it is, that wouldn't that involve each waiver, getting right down to each student?
No, that really had nothing to do with individual IEPs. The waiver is as to the number of disabled students in each school, and why a school should be accepted from that 20% requirement. And it doesn't really have to do with individual IEPs. Now, the board argues that enforcing the 20% requirement would require them to transfer students to other schools, contrary to their IEPs or to change their IEPs. There is nothing in the agreement or anything any judge, the judge or monitor said, that would require that. In fact, exactly to the contrary, Judge Gettleman several times went to pains to point out that he would not allow that to happen, that is not part of what would be required here.
So you're saying this should let the process take its course and go on with the waiver procedure?
That's right. And if Judge Gettleman has lived with this case for 14 years,
that's
if there's
said,
a,
yeah.
a problem with the informational requirements for a waiver, certainly Judge Gettleman, this should have been brought to his attention to change the informational requirements. And that was never done. So we suggest that... would be the appropriate step here.
Mr. Elson, doesn't this 20% cap cut against the fundamental reason the suit was brought in the first instance, that seeking individual determinations?
No, Your Honor. It's really necessary for the effectuation of the decree, because before the Corey H. suit was brought, many schools had concentrations of students with disabilities. And in order to prevent that from happening again, the monitor and the judge thought that we should have a presumptive 20% requirement.
What caused that concentration? Was that just normal population?
No. Actually, to its credit, the Chicago Board of Education was an early leader in the education of students with disabilities, but they did it at a time when it was thought that the best way to do that was to educate students with disabilities in special classes and in special schools. And we developed a system in which the tradition and the way of teaching was to do that. And therefore, Chicago and Illinois, too, became ranked like 49th in the amount of segregation of students with disabilities. And that's what led to Corey H. So it's essential to
49th
this.
Means it was the most segregated?
You're right, the most.
Because a few months ago we had a case here where a school – you're probably familiar with, up in Lakeland, I think it was, up in Wisconsin, they actually were putting $2 million into building just what you just described, one that was all students with disabilities. Mm-hmm. And the state or some group was challenging it, saying that's not mainstreaming.
Right.
So that's a pretty controversial issue among this community.
Well, it's not in the education community, and we think not in the country, because Congress was very clear in the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act in requiring students to be educated in the least restrictive environment when at all possible. And that's what Judge Gettleman is enforcing here. And having students disabled students distributed among schools in attempt to be in compliance with the natural proportion of disability students in the communities is the ideal and what the decree is striving for, but we recognize that there may be exceptions for various reasons, like cost saving, where they would have cluster programs. So we had a definite waiver process, but it just is not for 5 years. The board did not ask for a waiver for any school. It was only when the decree was extended that they gave this blanket request without an explanation. And there's no reason to think the monitor and the district court would not have agreed to maybe even all of those waiver requests if there had been a proper explanation.
Mr. Ellison, you challenged jurisdiction.
Yes.
But this extension, isn't that a change in the legal relationship? It extends that decree for, what, 4 more years?
Yes, till 2010.
2010?
It would be if the board had appealed it. But the board never appealed the extension.
What about this new Illinois law, the 30% provision? Isn't that a change in a new issue or in some way changes the relationship here?
It, not as to the 20% maximum. It really has nothing to do with that provision. Actually, in 2000, when the provision, the 20% was first agreed to and implement, when the monitor imposed that, the requirement was 49% in each class was allowed. Now it's been brought down to 30%, which is much nearer to this 20% school-wide maximum. So the disparity between classroom and school in terms of these maximums now is closer and less justified for an appeal than it was in 2000 when the board decided not to appeal. So that really the 30% is more of a reason not to appeal this, because there's less disparity in the two figures. And the monitor recognized that in the argument, I think. Now, in terms of jurisdiction, one of the reasons that this simply isn't ripe is we don't know how this provision would be enforced. The Board of Education says it has been, in fact, enforced. But it hasn't been enforced now. It's the enforcement situation now is the same as it was in 2000 and 2005, whereby we don't know if the court might enforce it by extending the decree or some other measure, or by having a different waiver process. There has been no order that any child be removed from a school, and Judge Gettleman made it clear that there wouldn't be such an order. This is a case, really, in terms of jurisdiction. There are about four different jurisdictional doctrines that this court has used to show why this case is not appropriately before this court. And one of those is that this is simply the reiteration, this appeal, appeal from this 2006 order, which is the same order that the judge gave in 2000. There's really no substantive difference. There's no change in the parties' legal relationship. If the board had wanted to appeal the extension, it could have done that, but it decided not to. So now it's apparently the board's theory that because it was extended, the board has a right to challenge every provision of the decree without bringing those provisions to the district court to see if the district court would, in fact, change those provisions, which goes completely against the final order doctrine, which requires that the district court make a ruling on the specific matter that's appealed from. There really is no jurisdiction in terms of that doctrine at all. Waiver denied. No. There's been no. Finally, there's been no stay of the course order. I think the board indicated that.
Well, I asked the question if it had been stayed.
Right. There's been no stay at all, and the enforcement process is going ahead. As it had been before.
But I guess the enforcement process is when the rubber hits the road, and there hasn't been any. The city of Chicago or the public schools have not been required to do anything with regard to any students, other than what's in the decree. I mean, I understand that, but I mean, moving students, I guess that's the only. Action could be taken other than moving students? I mean, that's about it.
No, that they could develop. The board could develop programs in other schools, of course, that could meet their special education needs in schools that are below the 20%, so there'd be no need to concentrate students in cluster programs. That's one thing that could be done. The board would have until 2010 has many years to change also its assignment policy, so it could just assign students in to schools that are under the 20% and not have to move any students at all. So there are all sorts of ways that the schools could meet the 20% without moving any students. And the board argued to Judge Gettleman repeatedly that this 20% requirement would require moving students. The judge was adamant, we won't let that happen, and there's no reason that it has to happen at all. And I'm confident that the monitor and the judge would not let that happen.
So basically the cap would bend enough to accommodate each student's individual IEP. I guess the cap would have to be flexible.
Right. Well, it would be flexible, but there's no reason.
You're talking about having to move students. There's also talk in the briefs here about a shortage of special ed teachers, specialists, people that this is a talent and takes more education,
right,
and therefore it's hard to fill these positions.
Well, if the board...
We don't want to do it from here, I can tell you that.
Oh, that's right. If the board felt that it just didn't have enough teachers in enough schools so that it could have programs there to accommodate students under the 20%, it could make a waiver on that ground and explain that to the monitor in the district court and possibly get the waiver.
How long would this process take for each school on going through the waiver process, do you think?
Well, we don't know. I mean, we haven't done that. There's no reason to think that the monitor wouldn't act expeditiously on a waiver request if it got the information. There's no reason to think that information is at all burdensome. It all may be easily available on a computer. We just don't know. Those arguments weren't made to the district court.
If it is burdensome or is something that requires hiring new people to even put it together, that's what you go to the district court with and challenge it?
We suggest you go to the monitor first and then to the district court. But those arguments were never presented to the monitor or the district court.
Thank you, Mr.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Ms. Gibbons? Ms. Gibbons, I'll give you another minute on your time.
Oh, thank you. I just want to focus on a couple of points that Mr. Olson made. The first is the plaintiffs keep bringing up that the Chicago Public Schools since 1998 or since 2000 when this cap was first discussed did not ask for a waiver. We didn't need to. The cap was not in effect. In 2000, Judge Gettleman was very clear. This cap would not apply, would never go into effect before June 1st, 2005, and at that point he was under the assumption, because the monitor's assistant told him and assured him, it in fact would be moot. Therefore, Chicago never had to attempt to get a waiver before 2005, which the minute it went into effect, we went through the process, and because there was no process developed, we did the best we could. Now, Mr. Olson talked about that there would be justified reasons for a waiver, and he mentioned cluster programs, separate schools. Those were all clearly delineated in our waiver request, yet the waiver was summarily denied. We put forward, no other evidence would have been needed. Ray Graham, separate school. Vaughn, separate school. Those are allowed under IDEA, yet neither the Illinois State Board of Ed or the monitor even attempted to look at any of the schools and say, well, let's take them off the table. It was just denied. Denied, no criteria were established for waivers, and no process. And the Chicago board repeatedly in several filings and in oral arguments with Judge Gettleman before the March 7th order was entered asked if you're going to keep this cap, please paint us a roadmap on how to get a waiver. We don't have a waiver process. They just keep saying denied and ask for all this information, which is burdensome. And we told the court it was burdensome. And in that March 7th order, there was no clarity. It merely said that cap is in force and it is a compliance standard that you must meet to end this litigation. Therefore, our legal relationship dramatically changed on March 7, 2007, because we don't know how to get a waiver, yet our schools must meet it. And I'm not sure, without transferring students, how that is going to be met. But more importantly, Mr. Elson talked about that these were for remedial measures, that somehow this cap was to assist Chicago in learning how to do an LRE decision and comply with IDEA and meet the fundamental principles of Corey H. The 20% cap does the exact opposite. The 20% cap is now a numeric formula that schools could use to deny a child an education in their least restrictive environment because the school has met its quota. It's there. I don't care you live next door to the school. You need to go somewhere else. We're full. And that flies in the face of IDEA. But more importantly, that March 7, 2007 order made two fundamental factual errors. When Judge Gelman entered the enrollment cap and made it law of the case, he said it had been in effect the entire time this litigation has been pending, and that was incorrect. It actually did not go into effect until June 1st, 2005, and we immediately asked for relief and help. But more importantly, at the end of that order, he states that that cap is necessary for the evidence and the remedial measures that led to the litigation that had shown institutional segregation of students with disabilities in the Chicago public schools. Yet, by the time that March 7, 2007 order was entered, Chicago had put forth boxes of evidence of what has occurred since this case was filed, what has occurred since we settled in January of 1998, and all of the measures we have done to end that institutional segregation. So there is no remedial measures that would require an enrollment cap. And for that reason, we believe it was an abuse of discretion, and it is an arbitrary cap with no rational basis in law or fact, and we would ask that you overturn it.
Thank you. Our thanks to both counsel, and the case will be taken under advisement.